Blog Talk Radio.
Here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson, and this is Carson's Corner. Pleased to have you with us here on this Friday night. We've got a great show for you, as always, but before we get to our first guest, let me just give out the phone number. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. We also have the chat room open for you as well, so please feel free to chime in the chat room for whatever reason you want to. And let me just tell you, we got in the second hour Dan Quinn. Many of you out there have been begging me to get an update with Dan Quinn. So a couple days ago, I spoke to Dan for about an hour or so. We're going to play you that update in the second hour of the broadcast, okay? So keep it right here. But without further ado, let's welcome our first guest of the evening, a man that's really no stranger to those that have followed mixed martial arts for a long time, and he's no stranger to this show. This is actually the third time we've had him on the show, and we're very, very pleased to welcome him back. John Peretti, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm really good. Thank you so much for the opportunity to get in touch with you guys.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. I think, you know, we've always enjoyed getting your perspective on a lot of issues, and I think the old school fans of MMA regard you as one of the real straight shooters of the sport. And I think those who haven't heard you talk previously on the subject will find that your analysis goes way beyond what we receive from the typical MMA media outlets and so on. And you're someone who really is known for his brutal honesty and outspokenness. And this seems to be like a lifestyle for you. Was there any events in your life which crystallized you as a realist?
Man, great start out of the blocks there, Bob. Yeah, I mean, that's just my personality. I mean, it applied to the art world. It applied to, you know, me teaching college for 12 years. That's just the way I my perspective is. You know, I really have a disdain for you know, bullshit, and I applicate that to everything I do. My father was disgusted with me very early in life as a perfectionist, and his phrase was good enough, and you know, we didn't gel on that. It goes way back. You're absolutely right.
What was a young John Peretti like? I know you have a martial arts background. Obviously, you had a vision for this style of competition, which was incredibly rare in the modern era, but in terms of psychology, I'm curious as to how your personality might evolve or stay the same.
Could you be a little more vague?
Well, I mean, were you always the genius type? I mean, were you always, you know, someone that envisioned, you know, the sport where we're at now, where nobody else did? I mean,
well, what I have to say is that since I was a small guy, since I was kickboxing and doing karate at 139, I was always interested in weight classes, and I always thought that big guys accepted mediocrity very easily. Right away, you know, when I was doing Taekwondo, Muay Thai, Tang Soo, all those things, I joined 5 karate schools at once when I first got interested in martial arts at 16. The reason I did that is because I really didn't believe a word that anyone was saying. And that, you know, that's an encompassment of my whole life. I always stress that, you know, that people not be lemmings. And then, you know, I started competing and I lost probably 65% of my amateur fights because different things like weight classes not being important, and when you won lightweight championships, you got this incredible gift that you got to fight for the grand championship, which I had never won one in my whole life, because you got to fight the heavyweight, and I was 139 pounds. So I walked around at 139. A lot of guys, you know, dieted down to 139 on the day, but, you know, that's what I walked around at 5'10". And that's before I started grappling, before I, you know, got my black belt from Gene LaBelle, one of the four first black belts from Gene LaBelle. And, you know, that's before I, you know, did 10 years of Wing Chun and lived in Chinatown in New York City, before I opened it, you know, my school in 1974 and, you know, and opened six schools thereafter. So, yeah, I mean, diversification was really important to me. You know, I didn't believe what other people believed, that staying within a style was the thing that, you know, was so important. Although I trained with some amazing people. I trained with William Oliver, you know, in Kyokushinkai. You know, I trained, you know, with Steve Gorick, you know, in Wing Chun, you know, and Stephen Ang in Wing Chun. And, you know, I train with great people. You know, I train with the great Gene LaBelle. My firstborn son's name is Luca LaBelle Peretti. You know, I train with the Machados before they kicked me out of their school, and so on and so forth.
Now, you also came up with your own martial art, correct?
Well, yeah, I invented the name Dao Jitsu Do in 1974, you know, basically the way of the grappling system, you know. And basically, you know, therefore, that system was a conglomerate of different styles, and I just awarded two black belts first time about a month and a half ago, you know, within my system, which is, you know, I think it was really important to understand, you know. Dr. Charles Malone and Dr. Peter McGuire, a chiropractor and one a historian.
How did that name come together? I really don't know a lot about the Asian culture and admit that readily, but I thought that Tao and Do had similar meanings.
No. One's a Chinese source and the other one is a Korean source, and Jutsu is a Japanese source. So I put them all together, you know, to meld into a system, you know, basically the grappling way, you know.
You know, I was interested to hear some of your recent appearances on Eddie Goldman's show, where you discussed your disillusionment with the sport of MMA and some of your plans for the future. But before we get into that and MMA and so on and so forth, is it true that you plan to relocate to Japan permanently soon?
Well, I'm sitting here in the Sea of Cortez right now, watching the sun go down and an almost full moon come up behind my right shoulder, and it's a very beautiful place. But I have 2 3-year-old twins, and I'm going to educate them in Kyoto, Japan.
Yeah, it seems like you've had a long time appreciation for the culture of Japan, and in many ways they seem to have a beautiful and quite brutal society. I mean, I suppose as a Westerner, you may not feel some of the societal constraints and frustrations that I've read many Japanese people have to deal with. Japan is in some ways is an epicenter of certain martial arts. Is that something which has drawn you to the region now or in the past?
No. Originally, the thing that drew me to that region was that I had a 17-year-old Japanese-American girlfriend very early in life, and her mother worked in one of the only restaurants in Westbury, New York, which was the first Japanese restaurant, and so I was attracted to Japanese culture. I actually started a company in the 80s called Totally Shinto, which was Japanese gardens, gates, and fences, which I propagated 80 species of bamboo. I've been immersed in the culture of Japan. I'm an intrahistorian on World War II Japan, so I've read probably over 500 books on the subject. I don't fit into a cubbyhole In my book that I've been writing for a year and a half, you know, mixed martial arts, even though I coined it, you know, doesn't mean that it's the whole book. You know, it's just it's part of the Martist that I am.
In previous interviews, you discussed with us your plans to promote the sport of fight ball, a sort of rugby and martial arts hybrid where striking was permitted. What's the status of this sport? Is the last time I recall you were on the show, you had just gotten back from a trip in Japan, and I just want to find out where the sport lies right now.
It's nowhere. I had meetings with all kinds of people who thought that it was in retrospect, you know, too violent and too sophisticated to travel around, even though it exists on a basketball court anywhere. I couldn't get backing. I guess it's fortunate for some that I couldn't, because I thought it was going to be a really exciting sport. I've been right before.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's definitely sounds like an interesting sport for sure. I mean, you know, I don't know. You're basically trying to, or have you just haven't been able to locate funding? Or is it just that it's pretty much at this point, dead in the water?
It's dead in the water. We worked on it for a while, my partner and I, there's really not a lot of interest, you know. I mean, everybody who hears about it just goes, oh, you know, it's a conglomeration of a bunch of different things. And it's really, I don't really look at it like that and never did. But, you know, I'm fine with it not happening, you know. I actually started to do this fight ball thing before I started Extreme Fighting. But Extreme Fighting took off and we left it on a back burner.
I see. Yeah. In the past, you spoke about the ball part of fight ball being what really intrigued you on a personal level and what drew you into sort of sporting that concept. Can you go into detail about why you think introducing a ball changes and widens the appeal what otherwise would be a combat sport event?
Yeah, I'll be brief. There's two different kinds of people in the world, and my wife laughs at me a lot about this, but she was professional Lithuanian handball player, and handball to Europeans is not handball, you know, against the little concrete wall that Americans play in prison. It's a real sport. It's kind of like water polo without the water. There are two different kinds of people. I'm one of them. If you throw a ball at me, I move my head and it goes past me, or I used to. Maybe not so much anymore. Maybe it hits me in the head. But there are other kind of people that actually reach forward and catch the ball, you know, like you see receivers in the NFL. You know, I mean, they're aggressively catching the ball. Those are two different kinds of people, and they have very different experiential, you know, neurons that fire off in a different way to do those things. I am of the other. So I think combining those two different kinds of people on a field, it's never really been done before. Mm-hmm. People that, you know, that move, you know, in a different way because punches or kicks or things are thrown at them, and then people that move and intercept those things, kind of like a shortstop in baseball. And putting those two different kinds of people on a field together has always been of great interest to me. My mother was a rabid baseball fan, and I only went to one game, and that was the last game of the Mets winning the World Series, and I had never, you know, been to a game before that nor after. So, you know, there were just different kinds of people, and, you know, and melding them, I thought, would be interesting. But again, it's a dead issue.
What about the risk of combat sports fans being put off by the introduction of a ball? I mean, I don't share this view, but I know some people feel that retaining the object is trivialized when you have full power of the strikes involved. Can you appeal to people, or could you have appealed to people who might feel that way, or did you just intend to go towards a different demographic altogether?
No, I had full rules and everything. You know, I mean, I understood what made action, obviously, and I understood what I thought, you know, a confined space would do to a ball game, especially a ball that weighed for men 15 pounds and a ball that weighed for women 8 pounds. The ball moves very slowly in space.
You've also said that you like, quote, the violence and the no rules aspect of fight ball. How does that square with your disillusionment with modern MMA, which I've heard you think now is too brutal?
The brutality of MMA, you know, comes from the anvil factor. Mm-hmm. The anvil factor is your head on the ground being compressed by my fist, you know, hitting it, you know, creating the hammer and anvil and the horseshoe, that's you. And that's what makes the difference. That's what's creating the problems in MMA. That's why people, you know, who I haven't seen in 8 to 10 years don't recognize me anymore and stutter like I do. You know, I had 16 concussions, you know. I mean, I understand why certain people wouldn't recognize me, because they can't. They've forgotten my name even. Now, some of those people are obviously intentionally forgetting my name, and others are forgetting it because, you know, they've been hit in the head too much.
Last time we were on the show...
You went right past that, huh, Bob?
Well, no, I got, you know, I was laughing at when you said some people don't want to mention your name, and I think, you know... we could certainly touch upon that too, but we spoke the last time you were on the show about your former UFC colleague Art Davey, and you know his project.
He was not my colleague. He was removed before I got there.
Okay. I don't know if you're familiar with the latest developments over at Exxon, but we've spoken to Art about it a couple of times, and it's always interesting. What are your thoughts on fight ball versus X-Arm in terms of a new sport, you know, with a combat-based model?
Davies has in print and vocalized that I was Extreme Fighting was a copycat organization. And I don't agree with that. You know, we started weight classes. We started gloves. In fact, I was, you know, the co-inventor of gloves. We started... rounds, and we started the rules that created it. He did none of that. So I disagree with him that we were a copycat organization. And now with this Exxon thing, it almost seems like the tide has, you know, gone out in the other direction.
Yeah, well, I don't even know the status of it. I mean, we had Art on a couple of years ago, and he was still working on it, but he actually came on the Blog Talk show because we were on Podomatic years ago, and then we switched to Blog Talk, and Art was on a couple of years ago. But, you know, look, he has the balls to put something out there, which is sort of crazy, and I'm not sure.
Oh, you mean like wrestling and punching people in the face at the same time?
Yeah, like arm wrestling.
Arm wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I agree with that.
I mean, but, you know, we'll see what
happens. I don't know if that takes balls.
Well, you know, I really don't know. I mean,
but, you know, being an ex-pugilist, you know, I'm of a different ilk than most of these people that are involved in the sport today.
Yeah. But you know, a lot of people and MMA fans objected to the concept of Exxon, but in some ways it feels like a pure combat sports type of you know, game or whatnot. But I don't know. We'll just have to see what happens there.
I wish him a lot of luck.
Yeah. Well, the last time.
I mean, I'm being serious. I wish him a lot of luck. Anybody that goes out there and raises money and puts people on the line, you know, I never put anybody on the line. I put all my money on the line, you know, and lost a lot of it. So, We all make decisions. You know, he obviously is a decision maker, and I wish him a lot of luck.
Can you break down the difference between mixed martial arts as you envisioned it, having coined that term and had such an influence on the early years of the sport, to the current UFC-type product, which dominates the marketplace?
Yeah, I can. What I wanted was that each individual athlete, and I was always a real proponent of the athlete, and also that's why I retired a lot of guys, because I thought they took too many shots, were independent in themselves, whereby they represented themselves or they had agents representing them, and that they would not be subjected to any kind of scripture that would limit them to who they could or could not fight. A genuine pyramid of who the best was. Not to pull someone out of your ass and say that they were now, you know, in a position to fight for the, you know, for the championship. That was not what I envisioned. Not to bring some pro wrestler in and decide that and they were now, you know, a viable option for the championship. And not to own the fighters. What I'm saying is that you must be an independent organization which allows others to come in and to gauge them in their ability. And I traveled all over the world, you know, doing that and rolling with people when I was younger and doing stand-up, you know, and look at all the people that, you know, I found. You know, I mean, from the Boss Rutens to the Randlemans to the Colemans to the Maurice Smiths to the, you know, to all the people that went on to be, you know, I talked to Jim Teachout the other day, and he said everybody that you discovered and brought into this became the managers and the trainers for everybody else who is the sport now. You know, as Cal Cooper said, you know, if you don't know what John Peretti did, you just weren't there. You know, I just find it really interesting that to me, that even though I've cloistered myself and stayed out of the limelight, that I'm the guy that no one wants to talk about, you know, except for, you know, a few individuals like yourself who have the nerve to do that. I did not look at this as being a WWF kind of thing, you know, modeled after that. When I spoke to the powers that be when I was in Italy, which has been disputed recently on the airwaves, I told them I was not interested in their job, and that I was not going to be the matchmaker for an organization that owned the fighters. My reputation was all I had, and I had worked very, very hard at it, and I was not fired, as their press release revealed that week, that I was still the matchmaker. I did not see this sport, although some people say I even created the music for the sport, which is funny, in extreme fighting. I did not see this sport as being, you know, a situation where people without reputation were brought in and thrown up against each other. I come from a very different, you know, space and time whereby matchmaking was something that, as Meyerowitz said, I took as an art and not a science. And I was very interested as a perfectionist to get better and better fights, even though I had lesser and lesser money to work with all the time. I wish I had $46 million to have thrown at this create a sport. I think these guys are incredible promoters, not unlike Barnum and Bailey, they've done a great job with that. As to creating a sport, it's something I don't even watch.
Yeah, I know. I've heard you mention it on Eddie's show, and so it seemed that it kind of went wrong for you, maybe, because somebody posted, there was an article on Full Contact Fighter back in 2001, which quoted Dana White as saying, I believe something to the effect that Peretti is still in, which I guess would contradict his claim that you were fired, right?
Well, obviously. I mean, how else would he know that I had quit unless they spoke to me? I mean,
right.
I quit because they explained to me how they wanted to run this organization and that my reputation was going to be utilized as you know, a pure matchmaker. And I had no interest in them. I'm an Italian-American. I grew up in New York. I understand who I want to work for and who I don't want to work for. I worked for Bob Meyerowitz. I worked for, you know, Donald Zuckerman. You know, I worked with Donald Zuckerman. We were partners. We're still really good friends. I'm still friendly with Bob Meyerowitz. We speak probably once every 3 months. There are people that I just didn't want to work for, you know, and people find that incredulous that, you know, that I wouldn't want to work for an organization, but, you know, I had done what I did and, you know, I'm very, stoic in my work process. And, I moved on, you know, I had really no interest in being rendered, you know, into something that I was not, you know, I mean, I was a human being who walked around and, you know, we were buying the UFC. So when it got outbidded, so to speak, and it was purchased, and you know, I think Bob did a great job and for himself and made money and got out when the getting out was good for him. I had no interest in continuing under those conditions. And I was called some really interesting things on Twitter, you know,
yeah.
And I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. And you said that, and you responded something to the effect of say it to my face or something like that. I don't know if Dana responded.
I said it was
that.
False what he was saying. And I proved it by citing his what he posted, you know, in whatever it was, what year that you just said. And then I said that you would never say that to my face. You know, he and I, you know, have only one thing in common, and that's Meniere's disease. We come from a different world. You know, he is a guy who has very powerful friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am a fighter. You know, as Valid said many, 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 many times on the record, you know, John Peretti and I are the only promoters who are fighters before.
Mm. And he deleted that. I couldn't find it on Dana White's Twitter account. But, you know, your points are all...
It's embarrassing, don't you think? Don't you think it's embarrassing, you know, on the phone for me to say something hostile to you or on Twitter hostile to you? The guy's never stood in front of me, you know, face to face. You know, he doesn't know who I am. I mean, I'm 57 years old. My God, you know, I'm not much of a threat. But I have one good fight left in me.
Yeah, no, I definitely know that to be the case. But the point is, John, is that it's, you know, you were talking about this earlier, how, you know, individuals like yourself and Eddie, who's been around, you know, from the beginning of the sport, are excluded because I would argue, you know, business interests. I would argue it's an inconvenient truth that you were, you know, the original matchmaker. It's an inconvenient truth because you do not toe the company line, just like Eddie. You say what's on your mind, and individuals that are not under the control of Zuffa, who speak out like you do and Eddie do, are, you know, often blacklisted. I mean, why is it that Eddie is not on any of these, not that he would do it anyway, but these so-called MMA shows that you see on Spike TV and ESPN. I mean, you know, they're bringing on guys that are basically Johnny-come-latelys, and I think that speaks a lot to just how bad the sport is now and how Zuffa's power.
I don't know, you know. I mean, Eddie is very political. I'm apolitical. You know, I've never even voted in my entire life. Eddie is you know, a Marxist. You know, he hurts people because of his intellect. I'm not nearly as smart as he is. He's an amazing character. I've loved him a lot, you know, for a long time. I always liked the underdog. I even convinced Meyerowitz to make him a judge at one point in time. But you know, the UFC, you know, back then was a very, very sticky place, especially for me to come in from extreme fighting. A lot of people disliked me for what I had said about them, and still do. Some are dead. You know, there was a lot of throat cutting. There was a lot of backstabbing, you know, by people who are actually still, you know, in the UFC. I don't know if that's the case. I just don't understand why I, as an individual, having done what I've done and very proud of what I've done for this sport, you know, has been, you know, airbrushed, as Dr. Peter McGuire said, out of the sport. I must be a real threat. And I don't find myself a threat. I don't put myself in anyone's face. I stand far and far away from the whole thing. But obviously the history, you know, lends itself to disinformation. And I can't tolerate that, you know, as a historian. I can't tolerate that. And that's why I'm writing a book, you know, and I think it'll be fun for people to read, just, you know, if they have the time and the patience to read it, you know, that, you know, the making of this kind of thing didn't come from, you know, just one genre. You know, it came from a really diversified background of little minor satellites that came together and, you know, and operated and wasn't dominated by a juggernaut, you know, as it is today. I think it's going to be interesting, you know, you for one, you know, will find it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely will. And just to kind of go back to one of your points earlier is that I think that, I mean, and it's not just you that's been airbrushed from the history. I mean, you know, look at all the early guys in the UFC. Meyerowitz, I guarantee the average UFC fan or mixed martial arts fan has no idea who Meyerowitz is or was or his role, and some other individuals too. And I would argue that is what Dana White and the Fertittas want, is they only want individuals to focus on the product now, and you know we see this even with ex UFC fighters. Look at a guy like Ken Shamrock, and I understand Ken and Dana and Zuffa have had their problems, but you know they don't pay Ken any respect.
Pay Ken a lot of respect either. I called him a mediocre ankle cranker.
Well, although
his brother, I give tremendous respect to, but you know, Ken and I have been, you know, in some of his intoxicated phases, you know, face to face. Actually, Pat Miletich, you know, basically saved my life once, you know, in a lobby, and then you know the fight went on into a restaurant. So you know, Ken and I have never seen eye to eye, especially when he became a, you know, an incredible, you know, pro wrestler and was you know, obviously jacked pretty hard. He even, you know, got in my face many, many times. But that said, I know what you're saying, and you know, I support Ken for what, you know, he did, you know, to mediocre opponents. And I support him, and I would support him, you know, face to face. Although I would qualify him as what I said, and I would never go back on that.
Yeah, it just seems like that there's been a whitewashing of pre-Zuffa UFC events, fighters, and figures that really are responsible for mixed martial arts becoming the sport it is today. And I think it's wrong. And I've had several of these guys on my show, you know, that agree with my contention and a lot of people's contention, is which is that the UFC is very, very short-sighted, and they exclude the figures that really help make the sport what it is today.
That's where, Bob, I got to tell you, buddy, I disagree. They are not short-sighted. I really, really have to be, you know, stand my ground on this one. And I'm a guy who usually likes to back up. I did all my road work backwards so that I could surprise people when I moved forward. I disagree. They're not short-sighted. They are reinventing history. You know, I equate it to Hitlerian deceit. They are not short-sighted. They are an incredible organization that, you know, they're led by a former bicycle newspaper delivery boy, from Boston. But, you know, they are not short-sighted. I disagree with that. This is intentional. It's intentional that there are people that I've spoken to in Vegas that I know very, very well that are afraid to even do an interview with me for my book because they have to live in that town.
Mm-hmm.
So I disagree with you. I'm sorry, and I have good reason to because of all the interviews that I've done. You know, Frank Shamrock wanted to be the greatest fighter in the world, and no one gave a shit about it. You know, and I wanted to be, you know, the greatest fighter that I could be, and even if I had to create a sport to do it. These guys know what they're doing, and they're obviously, you know, deem me a threat. And the history of threat. So they rewrite it, and they get nasty about it, and they get and they get funny when they type. But thanks to people like you and Eddie, you know, we get to speak, and you know, I get to write a book, and you know, and some people might even, you know, make a little movie soon.
Going back to some of the last UFC events, which you were matchmaking for, did you feel that the sport was headed in the wrong direction then, or did the feeling just come into play more after Zuffa and Joe Silva took over?
Joe Silva took over? Oh, that's a giant statement since I gave him his job. Joe Silva took over. That's amazing in itself. No, I thought we were doing really well financially. Obviously, we were not, and every show cost me another $50,000. I had to do a better job the next time, you know, with less money. But I felt really good because we invested $200,000 to Bob to try to buy the UFC. I thought it was going really well. We had great shows. We had some really great matches. 50 of the 100 greatest matches are still mine, but no one knows that I made them. I thought it was proceeding really nicely. You know, I was wrong. You know, Bob was leaving, and I didn't get a chance to run the organization. But I thought it was going really well. I just. You know, what happened thereafter, you know, was the choice of the power elite of Las Vegas.
When I go back to those Zuffa shows, you know, before they took over, in some ways I feel like they laid the blueprint for what modern MMA fighting would look like, which is why I'm curious as to the specifics of what you think has changed now. I mean, surely some of these fights, Barnett versus Hizo, Shoney Carter versus Brad Gumm and so on and so forth. They had a mixture, I think, of striking and grappling. I mean, even some of the old Battlecade fights, you know, Sperry versus Igor Zinoviev.
Classic.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson versus John Lober and Paulson versus Paul.
Classic. I'm glad I never met John Lober in a bar.
You know, he's actually on Facebook. I was thinking about friending him. But
listen, I talk to John once a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I talk to John more than I talk to Eager.
Yeah.
John's an amazing individual. He was one scary motherfucker in his time.
Yeah. Did he beat Frank Shamrock early in his career?
That's a matter of record. Did he or did he not?
I don't know.
You have to watch the fight to make a decision.
But some of these fights definitely laid the groundwork, I think, for evenly matched and exciting fights with, you know, grappling and striking. Doesn't the modern sport retain some of that feel? And if not, why not?
Well, I'll thank you for that compliment first. I mean, it sounds like it was a compliment.
Yeah.
And I thank you for that. A lot of guys hated me for making the matches I made, and then thereafter, if they won, they really liked me, or if they lost, they didn't talk to me for 2 years. the reason that these fights don't work well is because that the people that are making the matches have no direct understanding of what it takes to match people. Meyerowitz said it best: matchmaking, you know, is an art. It's not a science. And he was absolutely right. And he also said to me about 6 months ago that he wished he had listened to me a little more and to others a little less. But I think that what you're seeing is I've said it before, purposeful mismatches.
And do you think that I know you've spoken on this with Eddie a lot, that there's an emphasis on striking, there's an emphasis on fighting in an exciting way where, you know, in the past you've had fighters apologize for, you know, winning by submission and so on. Do you think that plays into it too?
No. I was all for it, you know. Don't forget, I was a stand-up fighter before I was a grappler. You know, I was all for it also, you know. I mean, Maurice and I talked about, you know, things, you know, before the Conan fight, you know, we all sat around, and, you know, and Conan talked about it, you know, what he was going to do, and, you know, Maurice talked about what he was going to do, and Carlson, who I just loved, you know, who was misrepresented by certain individuals, you know, and ripped off. He was a wonderful human being. We all talked about it. You know, I thought that the head kick was still for me, you know, and I retain, you know, by some people's opinion, the greatest, you know, vertical sidekick in the world, you know, in history. I thought that the head kick was the bring it all, you know, the culmination of excitement, you know, in the sport. And I thought it was utilized really well by a lot of individuals, and I could name them if I had a memory. I liked the stand-up. Submission is a great thing if you have a great referee. You obviously don't have great referees anymore. You have to like it. I never had a big right hand. I had a good left hook to the body. I punched to the body and kicked to the head. Other people can attest to that, you know, as they sat on their ass. I think that the head kick is one hell of an exciting thing. I like the stand-up. I don't think that's a detriment to the sport at all.
I remember you said the commentating was horrible, quote, like pro wrestling, gimmicky, and so forth. And even Eddie Goldman has even described it. I was laughing as a Tony the Tiger type announcing. Oh, that's great! And he does his impression.
Everything's great.
Yeah, right.
Everything's great. It was like the late Jeff Blatnick, you know, trying to figure out the difference between an armbar and an ankle crank. You know, he just couldn't manage. You know, I mean, it just everything is so skewed. You know, everything is so exciting and beautiful and wonderful, but really it's not. You know, it's not. It's just it's mediocre. And there's some, you know, great talent out there, you know, who have, you know, done pretty well. But, you know, the UFC has created one great name, and it's not a fighter.
Who is it?
Well, when you say UFC, you know, in fact, Bob Meyerowitz said to me, I think a week and a half ago, that when someone called him about going to the 20th anniversary, which obviously no one called me, nor interviewed me or anything.
Of course.
He said that the people that called him, and this is a quote, you know, to start, Bob, if I'm wrong, lightning strike me down. It's a clear sky. I think it could happen. But he said that the people that called him said that it was not the UFC that called him. It was Dana White's UFC that called him.
Mm. They released that documentary. I didn't get to see that though, but I was looking on some of the forums. I'm assuming you didn't even see it either.
Well, that's a funny word, don't you think? I mean, you could say they released a docudrama, but they
that's
couldn't
true.
Release a documentary.
And
they have no credibility. I mean, it's like saying the UFC Hall of Fame. You know, the UFC Hall of Fame is the King Hall of Fame. You know, they have no credibility.
But you know, it's funny if you go on the forums like I was going on, you everybody just loves it. Yeah, but you know, and this is what happens is that you know you can get it played on Fox Sports One or whatever network they're on, and people absorb this, people buy into it, and they infect other people with, you know, a very, I would argue, short-sighted view of the sport, and it becomes history,
Listen, I just got back from Cabo San Lucas, right, for 2 days, right? You know where that is?
In Mexico?
On the tip of Baja, California. It's like this big resort place for Americans, and for some Europeans, actually. So I'm surrounded on the beach with all these guys who, like, you know, lift weights or curls for the girls kind of guys. And you know I'm an Olympic weightlifting coach, right? So,
right.
So my boys are number one in the nation, right? And my other boy is 25th in the world, so... So I'm walking around, and they all have these, like, tap-out tattoos and, like, you know, and they're all wearing, like, all this, like, you know, tough guy stuff, you know, and here I am, you know, 57-year-old man poolside, you know, and I'm watching this circus, and the most ironic part about it, Bob, I mean, in my limited vision, in my limited ability to remember and in my later parts of, you know, my life, I created this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm living in it, and it's alien to me. I'm walking around, and all these guys, you know, as Gene LaBelle said, you know, those are nice ankles for breaking. You know, All these guys are like, you know, they're walking around on sticks, you know, and they think they're tough, and they're puking and getting drunk, and talking about how tough they are, and I talked to a bunch of guys, and they're like telling me they're mixed martial arts fighters, and they're, you know, and I created it.
Well, you know what's funny too is that you see these guys. It's even worse when you go to some of these shows, but you see these guys walking around, and I've walked up to some of them because I'm curious. You'll see like a fight team shirt or. You know, and I go up to them like, do you train? I'm like, yeah, they always train. And then when you get specific with them, they can't tell you who they train with. They start to, give you the Ralph Cramden, blah, 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 blah. So I think it's more of an image with a lot of these people.
Yeah, that's a funny analogy. Jackie Gleason was my father's next-door neighbor. They danced together and played pool together. So when you
really?
Said that, that hit a nerve. Yeah, my father was a great dancer. Actually, my son Enzo is a great dancer.
Is it true that
I didn't get it?
Is it true that the Honeymooners was only on for like a year?
Oh, I don't know that. I'm not a big TV watcher, so I don't know that. I mean, I felt like I watched it for 10 years. Though my father watched it all the time, you know.
Yeah, I gotta look that up. I heard that it was only on for like 1 year
or
so.
And I'm really, Bob, I'm really bad with dates. And I'm really bad with math, and because of my concussive history, you know, and my multiple sclerosis, you know, I'm really bad with, you know, with recollection. In fact, I have a hard time recalling, you know, people's names. This whole thing, you know, it to me is very interesting. You know, it's a part now. It's a big part of life, and mixed martial arts in America, you know, was a big part of my life. And, you know, I'm proud to say that I did what I did, although no one knows what I did.
I want to kind of transition here to the use of gloves, which I know that you're directly responsible for the use of gloves in mixed martial arts and even the design.
You're probably the only person that knows, right?
Well, me and a few others, but yeah, pretty much. And what do you make of this whole, you know, eye-poking issue here where Joe Rogan, the commentator, has suggested...
Joe Rogan, the comedian.
Well, yeah, the fan, the fan slash comedian and whatnot. Is there a way that these gloves can be modified to reduce eye poking, or is it just, you know, something that's going to happen?
Well, you can web them tighter.
Yeah.
Just like boxing, they web the thumb, and then, you know, everybody except, you know, people with, you know, tremendous experience, you know how to use the thumb properly, you know. The gloves were designed by me and Dr. Aswanek in four sizes, and they were designed to prevent, you know, injuries to hands. Period. So that fights would last longer and that people wouldn't hurt their hands. I broke my right hand 27 times. I broke my left hand about 16 times. My hands are mangled. I have, you know, osteoarthritis. I got them injected last week again with serum from my own blood here in Mexico, which is legal. I didn't want people to go through life, you know, with what I was already, you know, feeling, you know, where my hands just did not work anymore. That's why we made the gloves.
Now, we've heard a lot over the years about gloves placing the emphasis on repeated head blows, which, you know, may be reduced, and I want to get your opinion on this, with extra padding. Or is that basically an oversimplistic idea of what could solve the problem? Because, as you said, the anvil effect, it doesn't make a difference what padding is in the glove if you have somebody that's getting hit and their head is hitting back and hitting the mat.
Compression.
Yeah, and that's even backed up. I mean, this is backed up by doctors. Like, for example, I believe Dr. Margaret Goodman has even stated the significance of this problem and whatnot. So really, more padding.
But she talks about concussive problems, but I talk about compression problems. I don't know anybody else is talking about that. And more padding is not going to change any of that. You know, I mean, if you're a kickboxer and you get hit in the head and your head flows through space and you go hit the ropes and fall down, you know, you moved 15 feet to the back, you know, but if I lay your head on that thing, you know, your head's a pumpkin, you know, and I will break it. And if I land an elbow on it, you know, like Jeremy Horn, who should be considered like Mike Andujar, you know, he should be considered a guy who invented a technique that was miraculous. Jeremy Horn was a Gumby genius. I mean, he was a wonderful grappler. I thought he could have been in better shape a lot, but he's just great. What he would do is he would, with his right hand, say he would turn your head to the right when it was on the ground. Then he would hold your chin down and drop the elbow on it. That's classic smarts right there. Classic smarts that pinned your head and dropped. And then add compression on your mandible. I mean, that's just great stuff. That's rebellion.
Should we consider no gloves at all? What about a reboot of the no holds barred days?
No gloves means shorter fights. I mean, like some moron comes out and breaks his hand in the first punch. I won't name those morons, but they know who they are.
Do you feel like headbutts and soccer kicks are too brutal?
Oh, head record. for fucking murder. I mean, I just loved them. I've always loved them. I was actually really skilled in my right elbow to the eyebrow. You know, that was the, I loved opening up cuts there. That was really good. See, I stand in two different places. You have to understand. You know, I'm a complicated guy. You know, I am attracted to violence and was a fighter, you know, for a large part of my life and really, really loved mixing it up. I didn't fight with civilians. I tried to fight with people that were my peers. But I really loved it. And with that note said, then I'm also the guy who has to pay for what has happened to my body. That's why I don't want my kids, you know, involved in those kinds of sports. And you know, parents have to start thinking about that.
Right.
They have to say, hey, wait a second, just because I'm a boxer and this and that, you know, I did mixed martial arts and this and that, you know, but you didn't take the kind of abuse I did. You know, I trained with the best guys in the world, and I wasn't one of them.
You know, speaking of guys who have had their bodies suffer, on the last show, you and I joked about Gary Goodridge not being in an X-arm.
It's not a joke. Trust me, I don't joke about Gary. You know,
no,
that's
this
not a joke.
This was years ago. This
No. I remember. I mean, but interestingly enough, I remember. But Gary, you know, was a tough guy and a great arm wrestler. You know, but you know, I stutter. I don't speak like I used to. You know, I have a lot of cognitive dysfunction. You know, I don't joke about anybody hurting.
Yeah, I know that. You know, Gary is someone both you and I respect immensely. He seems like a good guy, a genuine person. It's really tragic what happened to him, but not that surprising in retrospect, given, you know, how he fought and so on and so forth. Are these sorts of devastating brain injuries part of the reason you've turned away from the UFC type of product?
No. Tough question. No. It's my personal history of pain, you know, and it's really personal. I don't want to see anyone suffer the way I'm suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for any sport. But since this is a sport that I helped create, listen, that's about as generous as I can fucking be, you know, that I helped create. I'll repeat it again. I don't want to see guys go through this 10, 15 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to wake up one morning at 40 and go, duh, where was I last night? What the fuck happened? I don't want to see that. I don't want anyone to go through that. I appreciate what these guys are doing. I mean, I've broken everything in my body. I still have teeth stuck in my left shin from somebody. You know, I've busted myself up. That is not why I do not watch this stuff. I do not watch this stuff because I cannot listen to it. In fact, I watched it for a year with the sound off.
Right.
Because what they were saying was so infuriating to me. So I had to watch it with the sound off. And I went from with the sound off to not watching it at all. And Eddie pleaded with me to watch it for a long time because he wanted me to commentate on it. And then I could not because it's bad.
Mm.
It's mediocre. There are purposeful mismatches. You've got to be an idiot not to see it or just completely uneducated or ignorant of what really goes on. Listen, I was in the top strata of this. I chose not to even bet on fighters that I knew who would win in the Vegas mode. I do not like the sport. I do not watch the sport. It's really simple, but not easy.
Now, I want to ask you, going back to head injuries, how bad do you think it's going to get before any sort of change is made?
Well, I don't know. for certain individuals, just like it is in the NFL, just like it is in the Army, just like it is in the, you know, in Special Forces, just like it is in all the guys who, you know, have to take emotional and physical pain daily. It's going to get bad. Will anybody care? I don't know. It's going to get bad. Maybe I won't be alive to see it. You know, maybe you'll, you know, be talking about, you know, me, you know, as having a problem, you know, and not getting any help for that problem, because it's going to get bad. The brain fog is bad. You know, I don't look forward to these guys, you know, and not having, you know, a union to protect them.
Right.
I don't look forward to it. Don't get me wrong. You know, I don't want to be Jimmy Hoffa.
You know, there was a horrifying article about New Jersey fighters, including our guest and previous guest and friend Tom DeBlas, who's fighting tonight at Bellator, which described fighters who haven't taken a lot of in-ring punishment and their troubles with memory loss and even simple tasks. And I know guys that, you know, are still relatively young in terms of their fight careers, and these guys are already reporting symptoms to me that, you know, they're having problems with memory loss and so on and so forth. Are we in a dark age for fighter safety right now in terms of understanding and appreciation?
Absolutely, but let's look at different things for a second. Let's just try to analogize this. I'm sorry if I get tangential, you know, get on my tangent, my horse named Tangent. But speaking of horses, you know, horses only race for 3 years, right? They take so many drugs, right? Their hips don't work anymore. When you started giving those same drugs to football players, their hips didn't work anymore, and they couldn't run anymore either. Thai boxers, you know, real ones, 2 years maximum. Can't fight after that. Too many blows. Too fucked up. Too broken up. So what's going to be the amount of time that a guy in his peak of his career, you know, I'm not talking about a Boss Rutan, you know, I'm not talking about a superhero, you know, I'm talking about just a normal guy, you know, in the peak of his career, you know, I mean, there's got to be a limiting factor for the amount of time that someone can participate in a sport like this. And you're going to see that, you know, and you're going to see more and more guys who really just are not what they were. I mean, I'm doing interviews like 3 times a week now for my book, so I'm speaking to guys who are not making any fucking sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I used to be an articulate, you know, person and a teacher, you know, sometimes I don't make any fucking sense.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's going to be a battle. It really is, because it's almost, I think Eddie is liking this to the tobacco industry, where, you know, for years there was reports about how cigarette smoke was causing cancer, or some correlation between cigarette smoke and cancer, and the tobacco industry fought and really bullied the news media into not taking a more critical approach. And then finally it became just so overwhelming that in any newspaper in the country now, you're not going to find someone printing that cigarettes do not cause cancer, because it's like the proof is overwhelming. And I think that's where we're going to be headed towards with concussions right now, because the special interests out there are going to fight this. And they already have, you know, if you look at some reporting in the NFL and some of the pushback that the NFL has done in terms of reporting on concussions and injuries and so on. So we really are in a dark age, but it's going to take a lot more work. And like you said, you may not be alive once we start to really make progress on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, you know, no one that I'm associated with, younger people, you know, and being a youth, you know, Olympic lifting coach, you know, I'm associated with a lot of young people, you know, are not going to get involved in this kind of activity and take that kind of trauma to the head. And I talk to parents all the time. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You got me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Did you lose me for a second?
No. We're good.
Okay. Trying to get rid of me?
No, not at all. You were saying?
I think it's going to be a rough, bumpy road, and some individuals are going to get hurt, and they're going to get permanently hurt. And I don't like it. I don't condone it. And just so other people can make money, you can look at boxing as a prime example of this kind of a situation where people are permanently hurt and promoters make money.
A lot of fighters are retiring early because of, I guess, the pay structure of MMA and because of injuries that they've sustained throughout their career. Luke Como, Nick Dennis, Cole Conrad from Bellator, Kyle Kingsbury. A lot of people just, are seeing the writing on the wall, and it's noble. It really is, I think, because ultimately the sport, I don't know if it really can sustain itself at this point, John. I really don't think it can because of the current landscape. I mean, you look at the UFC and how the UFC is basically a monopoly, controlling almost all the top fighters in the market, and still these fighters that are fighting are, they're not making a lot of money, and that's, if you've got just a handful of UFC fighters that are making decent money, what does that say for all the other fighters, the 98% of fighters that...
Barnum and Bailey were billionaires, right? How much did the jugglers? How much did the jugglers make? And the acrobats and God forbid we talk about the fucking elephants.
No, that's very true. It really is.
But you know what I got to tell you, just to change the subject because this gets boring. But what I appreciate most about you is your sobriety.
Yeah, thank you.
Because you really, even when I say something that's provocative, you shut me down. And I really appreciate your sobriety. I get off, obviously on tangents, and I get off on emotional impact, and I'm a very passionate guy, But you're very cool-headed, and I've listened to, tons of your interviews. And I wish I could be on more, and I really appreciate that, about you. So I just want you to say, I just want to say to you that keep up the good work, and I got to sign off.
Well, John, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Hopefully, we didn't keep you here too long with my questions, and I really wanted to build on previous discussions and delve into these issues that we've discussed in the past. Before I let you go, is there anything that we should let people know in terms of projects you got going on and how they can keep up with you?
Well, my blog is up. I don't write on it much because I'm writing full time on my book. I'm interviewing. You can contact me on Facebook. If you remember me, I'd love to talk to you. I wish everybody well that can still remember who I am. I'm still alive and hanging in there.
Well, John, I always enjoy listening to your interviews. I tune in anytime you're on Eddie's show, and I want to encourage people to visit your website. I believe you still have your website up at www.johnperretti.com. That's 2 R's, PERRETTI.com. That website's still up, right?
Yeah, but mostly I work off my blog, and again, I'm writing full time. So contact me on Facebook, let's get together. I reach out to everybody that I've met over the years. As a passing note, I don't know why the truth is such a threat.
Very, very good point. We'll leave it there. John, thanks a lot. Let's do it again sometime real soon.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care, brother. All right, that was John Peretti here on Carson Square. That was classic. That really is. We went over an hour. And I'm sure we probably could have went on for another hour. So that's always a good sign, if you have somebody on the show and they're on the show for a long time and it's a real good engaging conversation, that means that something clicked, something connected. All right, without further ado, I'm going to play the update with Dan Quinn. This is going to be an hour long, so we're going to run over past the 10 o'clock time limit. But I really want to get this out because I think this is very important. Many people out there have just been begging me to get interviews with Dan Quinn, to get updates with him. And sure enough, I was able to do so. So I'm going to actually be watching Bellator during the Dan Quinn update. So the first clip is going to be about 44 minutes, okay? Then the second clip is going to be about 15 minutes or so. We should have time. If not, if I can't get the second clip in, I'll just play the first clip, which is, again, it's 44 minutes, and we'll play the second half or the second quarter of the update on our next show. So without further ado, here is Dan Quinn here on Carson's Corner.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Quinn is back on Carson's Corner. It's been over 2 months since we last spoke to Dan. Many of you are wondering what's going on with his condition in Sacramento County Jail. He joins us now. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm my 30-day LOP, life improvements. It happened because someone was trying to come on my cell and I knocked them out, you know, and shit happens. And I've got a real quick thing I want to read here, Bob, and then we can get to our question and answer. All right?
Sure.
Is that good? Okay, Bob at Carson's Corner. I'm praying that Madonna and Miley, the Eminem twins, validate the fountain of orgasm for women, a.k.a. the violin, and that Stevia both kicks cocaine's ass at the Stimulant Olympics, and as the sugar cures the body's cancer, obesity, and diabetes in magical Hollywood movie-type speed. Ladies, fact, men are fucking killing Earth, because that's all men were designed to do, to fucking fight. See Earth's constant state of conflict and war and battle and dangerous overpopulation problem. Hopefully realize women used to run shit, okay? Humans now the only animal species run by men, and that the only hope for Earth's survival and salvation is for both women to retake control of the planet. Humans to stop using internal combustion engines because they're smoking all of our H's, aka hydrogens, into smog and vanishing water and making Earth more toxic and killing it. Ladies, read that slave book called the Holy Bible, where supposedly God, but in actuality Satan, lies to Eve saying knowledge would kill her, okay? When in actuality what it does is it enslaves her to an eternity of childbearing, sex slavery to men, and painful childbirths. Remember when Jesus attacked the essence of all evil at the moneylender's table, scattering ching, ching, ching on the ground, and $3 signs are so easily changed into 666. Ladies, as it takes fire to beat fire, so too will it take trillions of dollars to defeat and reclaim Earth from the greed of rich men who are trying to kill it, okay? Enter Einstein's cold fusion, which actually equals confusion, because it should actually be cold fission, the magical miracle seen inside your very own blender as stevia safely splits H2O into a natural gas. See split H2O's quote-unquote exhaust slowly morph into magical liquid below soapy, and before hidden man-made toxin chemicals, leave the pure H2O on the bottom, banish 6 breast tumors and 62 pounds of obesity, plus type 2 diabetes from my uncle in 4 short months. Extrapolate and multiply that, ladies, across America, and then pull it up and sell it. And that healing of biblical portions equals eventual trillion. 95% plus of profit donated to charities and the hungry and the homeless, and starting new companies and new corporations that pay 95% of profit back to workers, those who actually earned it. Profit sharing, replacing slave capitalists, taking back control of Earth and giving it to the meek and the masses. Fulfilling my 26-year-old vision I had at Notre Dame. Ladies, see my curse on YouTube and Dan Quinn's Notre Dame play. Me fired by Lucifer Lujols, okay, for seeing that Buckus Ward and White Lawrence Taylor replay. That the network sportcasters going silent equals we're actually living the Hunger Games, okay, the capital reality that would enrage Jesus and make him come out punching the rich from the grave. How'd that go, Bob? What do you think?
Excellent, Dan.
Okay. Now, that rubbing the belly, Bob, have you ever in your life, before before, you know, I told you about the violin, heard about rubbing the belly when you're orally pleasuring a woman.
No.
You ever heard of that? No. Okay. Madonna and Miley, anybody out there, like Joe H. U., give me four. Okay, pass on if you care. Putting your hand on the belly, below the navel and above the pubic bone, pressing the inside fingers, treating the G-spot, left yin and yang, yin and yang, massaging both dots, clitoral stimulation, bam, okay, triple-digit orgasms, and if that wakes the M&M twins up, they can start fucking around with stevia, you know, it's going to release a lot of people. I mean, Bob, don't you think that if a good attorney were to go in front of the Supreme Court and say, look, the FDA, a branch of the government, makes stevia illegal. It's actually better than cocaine, okay? If people knew about it, they could have used this instead. And I think that would be a good argument to get people released from prison and jail. What do you think, Bob?
Absolutely.
Okay. There you go, Bob. Okay. So, and then what I want to do is talk about the stevia and the THC combination. Actually replacing methamphetamine, you know, for 4 to 5 days, you know. I mean, Bob, have you ever smoked weed before?
No.
No, we're going to have to actually convert you. Do you think there'd be a time, Bob, if we were actually doing a show where you would be part of the test group, you know, taking so much THC that it would actually put an elephant or a rhinoceros to sleep and then counterbalancing with enough stevia to make you feel like Superman? Would you take part in that?
Perhaps, yeah. All right, Dan, we got a whole bunch of questions, but first of all, a gentleman named Jeff Cooper contacted me on Facebook and wanted me to say hello to you.
Oh, fantastic. I love Jeff Cooper. I mean, he's one of my best friends in high school. Tell you what, Jeff Cooper is a perfect example where high schools go wrong. Jeff is one of the smartest individuals. I think they might be talking to me. Jeff Cooper is one of the smartest individuals I've ever met, okay? He might not have been great at school, okay? And he didn't do that great at school where a lot of people, you know, it actually kind of fucked me up. I didn't know if they were talking to me, but I'm shutting it down. Anyways, yeah, I have love for Jeff Cooper, okay? What else did he say?
No, he sent me a whole bunch of messages on Facebook, saying that he's known you since you guys were in seventh grade, and I told him I'd give him a shout out on the air.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'll tell you what, when I make the play, you see me make the play, Bob, right?
Yes.
Okay, did you know that I am wearing basically illegally bought by drug profits $475 or $580 Donza's high-tech pro shoulder pad? Did I ever tell you that, Bob?
No.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody else on the team had these bullshit shoulder pads that, you know, Notre Dame handed out. And Jeff Cooper, one of my best friends, gives me fucking the high-tech shit. Okay. So I'm actually making one of the greatest stops in the history of defensive college football. Okay. I'm actually wearing illicit games. You know, how would you describe it? And I'll tell you what. Jeff ran with a fucking, they could do, they could do movies, okay? They have done movies. Tequila Sunrise?
Yes.
No, Tequila Sunrise, I guarantee you that Mark Brannon was Mel Gibson, okay? They copied Mark Brannon's life. Mel Gibson had the red cigarette boat. And, you know, if you Google search Jorge... Oh, hold on for 1 second, Bob.
Sure.
Former governor of Baja California. If you plug in white Siberian baby beagle tigers. It'll show you that he actually gets pulled over at the border down there in San Diego Block, and the white baby Siberian baby beagle tiger that he had in his car was, and maybe still is, still in the San Diego Zoo. And I held that in my arms, an exquisitely beautiful animal over at Mark Rana's house.
Wow.
And that, you know, hopefully that doesn't put me in any danger, okay, because I'm not trying to, you know, speak out of school. But the fact of the matter is, you talked to my mom, didn't you, about Peachy and what Perry Stewart did for her?
Yes.
Okay. Don't you agree with me that if a liquid can bring a 17-year-old cat that's sneezing blood bubbles because one of six tumors in her throat has burst, that it brought her back into perfect fucking health, and if it knocks six tumors and six breast tumors and 62 pounds and banishes type 2 diabetes in my home for 4 months, and it makes me basically single-digit body fat, and I can go 4 to 5 days without taking a shower, and I don't have any body odor, you think that eventually, Bob, when it catches on and we pull it up and sell it, that's going to generate a lot of money?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so Jeff Cooper, I'll tell you what, I love you, homeboy. Fact of the matter is, think about this, Jeff, how bizarre is it, how crazy, okay, since that's what my fucking attorneys are trying to do now after a year and a half that I've been in here, trying to send me down a crazy road, okay, how crazy is it, Jeff Cooper, that stevia plus THC makes me leaner and explosively faster than when I was at Notre Dame, and when I was at Notre Dame, I was catching Tim Brown from behind, okay, and I could smoke him at 6,200 fucking yards. What do you think, Bob? That's pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Dan, I got a question. MMA playwright writes, some criminal lawyer posted on the Underground forum that the maximum Dan faces is 1 year in jail for what he's charged with. So why is he now in his 16th month of confinement?
Okay, you know what? Okay, for one thing, there's a necessity of defense. If your life has been threatened, even if you are a felon, you can actually have a gun if your life is in danger. Okay, now there's a stipulation. There's kind of some murky water on how long you're allowed to actually have that weapon.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, I've been locked up for, 15, going on 16 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And my fucking attorneys, they're dump trucks, okay? I try to fire my attorney, and they're not letting me do it. You know, they're trying to fucking do the crazy route, Bob. And you know what? I'm not crazy. I'm fucking brilliant. Fact is, you know, if I can figure out how to make a woman come triple-digit orgasms. And have you ever had anybody validate that what I'm saying is true about the violin? Has Joe H. ever called you up?
No.
Okay. Joe H., please, if you're listening, call Bob Carson. Can I give your number out, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, 732-589-5613. That's 732-589-5613. And validate. Has anybody ever validated the violin too, Bob?
No.
Okay, huh. Well, it certainly wouldn't be Aaron Brink, porn star short there, okay? And Aaron, listen, okay? Fact is, I didn't warm up one bit. I didn't stretch out. I didn't fucking do anything before a fight, okay? That was the first time that I've ever ingested 3 teaspoons of bomb hash oil, okay? For the bomb the pool fight. Now, you saw the bomb the pool fight, Bob, right?
Yep.
When I hit a 255-pound Samoan in the head and break his fucking collarbone. Okay, how bizarre is that?
It's remarkable.
Okay, you know, I mean, if that, put it like this, I don't think it's...
1 minute remaining.
1 minute remaining, Bob, I want to call you back, all right?
I'll be here, yep. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't think that it's out of the ordinary for people not to think, oh, wow, that's extraordinary, but I do it on the pool. If most of America fucking actually believes the 9/11 scenario, what do you think, Bob? Do you think that planes actually made the Twin Towers fall down? Or do you think it was an inside demolition job from George Bush Jr. and all his evil friends?
You know, there's a lot of loose ends there. I really don't know what to say. I've examined some of the evidence involved. There's a lot of compelling evidence out there that suggests that there's something wrong with the official story given to us about 9/11.
Copy of the movie Loose Change.
Right.
It'll show explosions going down, but leading the charge. Okay. You know what? I mean, the fact is, if two airplanes flying into a building and fucking demolish it like that, they shouldn't be spending millions of dollars to demolish it.
Thank you for using IC Solutions. Goodbye.
All right, we're going to await Dan calling back. I'm so excited. It's been so long since I've spoken to Dan. And I want to find out, you know, he mentioned that his attorneys are having him go the crazy route. I guess that means that they want him to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, or they want to suggest that perhaps instead of going into jail or serving out his sentence, perhaps he can go to some psychiatric facility. I don't know. When Dan calls back, I want to get clarification on that, because that's very, very important, okay? It's going to, I think, give us an insight as to when Dan's going to get out. He's already been in jail for 16 months. I don't know if MMA playwright, his quoting of that lawyer that posted on the OG, if that's correct, if what he's being charged with is only punishable by 1 year, because Dan does have a felony on his record. So I don't know, you know, the California Penal Code, but that well. But from my understanding, if somebody has a felony on their record and they're in possession of a firearm, it requires a multiple-year jail sentence. Okay, let's go to Dan. Hello. Okay, Dan, we're back on the air. You mentioned that your attorneys are trying to get you to go the crazy route. What exactly does that mean?
That means that they fucked up, okay? Something like this. I was talking with a female on the seventh floor, okay? And she told me that she had my same fucking attorney. And then she told me that Andrew DiGiulio was basically selling her down the river going to a piece of shit. And I was thinking, huh, you know what? I've heard a lot about this woman. And so basically, I tried to fire this bitch, and they wouldn't let me do it, and so I wrote her a letter, and I said, look, you know what, I'm not trying to hit on you, but the fact is, I'm a genius, okay, so I have this speedy discovery, and this is not hitting on you, but the violin, you know, it's taken many women to triple digit orgasms, so they gave me a new attorney, okay, they used an excuse that they were going to have, like, because she had been on a case for such a long time, okay, and she was being transferred out, and so this new fucking dump truck named Paula Spano comes in, and the first thing out of her mouth, Bob, was, you know what, the first thing out of Sandra DiGiulio's mouth, to me, okay, was, so what's up with this strike out of Miami, okay, I mean, I told you that before, Bob,
right.
You know, I told a Miami cop, basically, it's not my fucking fault that mom and dad should have been fucking spayed and neutered to prevent a lump of shit sitting in front of me, so they fucked my leg up, okay. And they charged me with an attempted murder that never makes it to court, okay? I actually pled out to a misdemeanor trespass, but that attempted murder on a cop has stayed on my fucking record ever since, and I have had, my civil rights have been fucking nuked, okay, all over California because of that, okay?
Right.
So, yeah, what they're trying to do is they're trying to cover their ass, and the fact is, I have a winning case, Bob. I have a back on top of a gun, okay? And I've had my life threatened over 100 times. At least once for over a year, okay? Oh, and then they're charging me 6 months after the fact, Bob, with a 422, a criminal threat. They didn't charge me with that until after I filed the lawsuit, because they fucking pulled my handcuffs behind my back hands up for so long and so hard, they shredded the fuck out of my just surgical repair. Rotator cuff off. I couldn't fucking. Okay, you've never been in jail, have you?
No, but I know what you're saying. I deal with the law enforcement all the time, and your point about the public defender's office is well taken. It's like you're almost at the mercy of them because you don't have the money to pay for an attorney. So you know.
Well, okay. You know what I heard, Bob? I heard that Sacramento has the highest conviction rate in California. Okay, I guess that's true. I also heard that we have the highest overturn rate at the appellate court.
Right.
Okay? You know what that means, Bob? That means that the fucking okay? It means that they're fucking running up. You know, how much do you think it actually takes to... Well, it costs a lot more money than just doing it right the first time, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay? You know, we're talking about a cash-strapped state, okay? We're talking about a system that is fucking run amok, man, okay? Do we have billionaires stealing trillions and fucking getting a slap on the wrist and not doing shit? Bob, you know, I figured out that the rich realize, okay, not that I'm in right now, okay, although there's some intelligent guys in here, but when I was on 200 Plot Deep West, that's basically like a mini level 4 yard, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know what a level 4 prison is?
Yeah.
That's about as bad as it gets, man, okay? You know what it is? It's gladiator school, Bob. We're not teaching our guys to fucking redo their lives, to rethink it. We're in the battle situations. They're not putting friends in the same pins, Bob. You know what they do? They put enemies in the same pin. You want to know why? Because the CDC makes more money, okay, when people go to war and it's like, you know, basically battle pay, okay? You know? I mean, they used to call it the Department of Corrections. There is no correction.
Right. And you know what it is too, Dan, is that many of these prisons and these jails are run by private for-profit corporations that stand to make money on overtizing or overtime based on violent situations at the prison. I know that firsthand.
Yeah, okay, and even if they're not private, you know, for-profit, you know, they still make money overtime, the whole thing, 9 yards. Basically, I'll tell you this, one of the biggest mistakes I ever made was watching Paul Newman in Cool Hand Luke. You ever seen that movie, Bob?
No.
Okay, well, Paul Newman basically verbally motherfucks the cops, okay? And he's so fucking cool. And I thought that was fucking cool shit. And you know what? It basically was a huge no-no, man. You know, what I firmly believe is that firemen, teachers, and police officers should have their pay doubled and be given homes, taken
yep.
off the block. So they don't have the trials and tribulations and the anxiety and all that angst, okay, because they're dealing with the American public.
Yep.
Okay? You think that's a good idea, Bob?
That's a brilliant idea. We should pay teachers and firefighters and police officers more than we would pay Wall Street hedge fund speculators. Dan, I know that you mentioned that you had a loss of privilege for 30 days, which is why I guess we haven't been in contact for so long. Can you explain what happened in that situation? Somebody walked into your cell?
Well, you know what? If this idiot didn't fucking throw a knife on fucking film, okay, you know what? I wouldn't even say anything because that would be quote-unquote fucking speaking in a turn. I'm not a rat. But
right.
This fucking idiot throws a knife on film into the fucking day room. And guess what, Bob? We get framed, my cellie, my steel and I, we get framed because supposedly there's a fucking knife taped under the lid in our toilet, okay? Do you realize how fucking retarded that is? If we had a knife, it would have been fucking flushed, okay? But yeah, so I beat this dude's ass, and then my cellie, Bryce Beeler, he said that when I came back, people on 200 Pod, basically the blacks and Mexicans were chanting, Dan Quinn, and I'm going to be honest, Bob, I like white people to a point, but I can't stand most of them. Seriously, you know what? I have to say 90-95% fucking are just, in my opinion, worthless pieces of shit, okay? I don't know what that is. I don't want to get into too much time on that. But I'm a facilitator, Bob. I can bring people together. If I have enough money behind me, okay, I can basically fucking take over this fucking planet, okay? Basically, anybody that has a lot of money now, don't you think that Michael Jordan and Oprah and some of these black millionaires can actually get together, pool their money, and start a company basically for us, by us, okay, that does it better than Walmart and the McDonald's and all the fucking slave master corporations, does it better for a penny less, and now pays 95% of the profit down to every link in the company chain, people that actually earned it, okay, the workers. That's actually a redistribution of wealth, kind of like Robin Hood in a way, but it's using money. Would it be possible?
Yeah, the cooperatives. I mean, you can have a worker-owned cooperative. You can have a profit-sharing entity. You can expand ESOPs. You could do a lot of different things. And I don't know if it would be considered redistribution of wealth because the employees the workers create all wealth. All wealth is created through labor.
Yes, all wealth is created through labor, but, you know, I don't see how, in scientific here, but, you know, like Russia and socialism, which isn't a bad thing. There's a lot of, if it wasn't for socialism, America would go fucking bankrupt, okay?
Yep.
I've been reading about they're trying to fucking scale back the food stamps.
Yep.
And a lot of fucking people that work in the like in the grocery markets and stuff, they're worried because they might go under because they make a lot of money off that. You know, don't you find it absolutely disgustingly fucking? It makes me sick to my stomach, man. When there's billionaires out there that don't ever have to work a day in their fucking life because they're great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers, okay, basically were the robber barons in this country, and they're fucking tripping on families having food stamps to feed their fucking kids.
Oh, you know, the Fortune 400 list, many of the members of the Fortune 400 list were born onto that list. Wealth is generational.
I tell you what, follow the money, Bob. Follow the money, okay? I guarantee you that if the Vagos or the Hells Angels or any fucking, any outlaw fucking motorcycle gang, okay, or any outlaw group out there, if they stole $10 million, Bob, the United States government would fucking spend $100 million tracking every fucking penny down, putting them in prison for the rest of their life to teach people a lesson. Don't fuck with us. Isn't that correct?
Of course. That's why federal bank robberies are at an all-time low now because if you actually go into a bank with a gun and steal it or steal it by any other ways, then it's considered a crime. But Wall Street has the power and the wealthy have the power to legalize their theft. I got one question here. Andrew Rand on Facebook wants to know, who is your cellmate and are you on the bottom bunk?
Okay, for one thing, I'm on fucking, some asshole wrote me, oh, you're on the floor, you're on the crazy pod. No, they put me on the 8th floor with the baddest of the bad, okay? The 200 pound. And my cellmate, Bryce Buehler, I'll tell you what. Bryce Buehler is a borderline genius, okay? This kid is fucking smart as fuck, okay? He's 30 years old. I'm 46. I could technically be his dad, except I was a virgin until I was 18, so the time doesn't really, you know, it doesn't coexist right there. But he's a perfect example, Bob, of where the prison system has gone wrong. And I'll tell you what, okay, fact not fiction, Bryce Buehler, you don't know Nevada Union up in the hills, okay, Bob? Nevada Union, okay, is Nevada Union. See, Bryce, where's Nevada Union? Bryce might be asleep. Anyways, Nevada Union is up in the fucking hill country. Where's Nevada Union? Nevada Union, where is it? Grass Valley. Okay, Nevada Union is up in Grass Valley, Bob. And Nevada Union went 0-10 this year, I believe. But I'll tell you what, Nevada Union has gone fucking 13-0 before, won everything. And that's like you could take Nevada Union town and put it anywhere in Texas, Oklahoma, Florida. I mean, we're talking about football fucking crazy, okay? And Bryce Buehler, my celly, who is borderline brilliant, he actually took the starting running back before the championship game. He took him out, okay? This guy was disrespectful, so Bryce fucking beat his ass, okay? And he didn't get to play. And I guarantee you, Bob, that the first time that Bryce Buehler got in trouble, he should have been diverted to a fucking one of these programs, okay, that they use for people that are addicts, okay, and they're really fucking nonviolent offenders. But what they did, and I guarantee you, is because, don't you think, Bob, that if somebody takes out the starting running back in Plano, Texas, and Plano is 13-0, they're going for a state championship, and somebody takes out the starting quarterback, that the hierarchy in that town is going to have it out for the kid that did that?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. Bryce Buehler, I mean, he is a perfect example of where the fucking California penal system has gone wrong. They took a fucking brilliant kid and they turned him into a fucking savage killer, man. Okay? I mean, potentially, you know? But, this kid, basically I've adopted him, okay? He's like my younger brother now, okay?
Dan, when's your next court proceeding?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. I think I'm going back on the 15th, and they're going to try to determine my fucking sanity. know, is the difference between right and wrong, okay? And I knew that there might be some problems if I got caught with this gun. And I'll tell you what, Bob, the fucking punk that actually ended up arresting me, you know what I was doing? I was delivering a hamburger to Reverend Paul.
Right.
Okay? And when I'm in the back of the police car, Officer Toy says, I was at your house and I read it. Basically telling me, fuck you, couldn't get you, didn't got you, no. Okay? And then in the police report, it says that his police training times him seeing the green leaky substance in my fucking hands, okay, led him to believe that it was marijuana. When Bob, I had hash and it didn't have a green leaf in it, okay? This guy's a lying piece of shit. And why would they redact his, I was at your house and raided his statement, why would they redact that out of the game park camera? Can you give me a reason for that?
1 minute remaining.
1 minute remaining, Bob, I want to call you back.
Alrighty.
Okay, so they wouldn't redact that out of the fucking in-car cameras then, unless they thought there was something wrong there, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, and then my fucking dump truck attorney, you know, I'll tell you what, this bitch was lying her ass off to the fucking judge saying that, you know, I was acting like I was fucking crazy. You know, fact is, if they redact that statement, you know, and when she came up to, I'll tell you what, this is a fact, she came up one time in the 15 months or 6 months that I've been here, was I given an opportunity to actually listen to what was said on that tape, and she came up when they were serving dinner, okay? There was clanging going, crashing, you know, pans being fucking tossed around, and I couldn't fucking hear. And this bitch said that she's going to come back and give me an opportunity. The next thing I know, we're in court, okay? They're trying to fucking play me as crazy, and she's fucking acting like I went fucking insane, saying, oh, you know what, just a bunch of fucking bullshit, okay?
Thank you for using IC Solutions.
All right, we're going to continue with Dan Quinn. He's going to call back. I hope to get more of your questions here, okay? And, yeah, we have to see what happens with Dan. We really do. I hope for his sake that he gets out soon or something happens, because it's just ridiculous for him to be in jail for this amount of time without a trial. It's not like Dan is being charged with murder. It's not like he's being charged with a real serious crime. Although, you know, the authorities maybe, they do consider Dan to be a threat to society. I don't. I know Dan. I think Dan's heart is in the right place, but who knows? But in any event, justice has to be swift. That's part of our constitutional right, one of our constitutional rights. The government cannot deprive us of our liberty without swift justice, and that's very, very important. So Dan being in jail for 16, 17 months, you know, at this point, it's like even if he is found guilty, he's probably going to be having served close to 2 years. Then maybe he'll get out. Hello.
All will be recorded and subject to monitoring at any time. Thank you for using IC Solutions. You may begin speaking now.
Sorry for the time that it took to call you back, Bob.
No problem, brother. We're on the air still.
So, well, this automated system, you know, people can actually pretend to be me, okay? See my name and actually steal money from my account.
Wow.
$7, okay? But it won't take my fucking voice. No fucking figure. Is that crazy shit or what?
Yeah, just one more freaking problem that you have to go through. Do you know a guy named Brandon Harib?
Brandon who?
Brandon Harim.
No, I don't believe so. What was the story?
He has a question here. He said, remember starting a fight with me in 2007? I don't know what that's all about, but he wanted to know if they allow Stevie in the Slammer. If they allow Stevie in the Slammer.
If they allow Stevie in the Slammer.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's a good point. I should actually ask them to allow me to use it so they can say no and so we can open up that door, okay? Because, my body was starting to go to fucking seed, and it pretty much still is. But, I want to get back to the Jeff Cooper thing. Okay?
Sure.
Jeff Cooper was one of my best friends. Got love for him, okay? Jeff, listen, okay? Please help me get the stevia thing famous. Put stevia and water blend, seawater triple in size, see all the soapy shit float at the top. Know that with enough stevia, you can get all that soap shit out. It's a finite source. You can get it all out, maybe 3-4 blends, okay? And the stuff that's left over, I call it pure H2O, Jeff. Peachy, okay? My mom's cat, you probably met her. She was 17 years old, man, okay? She was down in San Diego when I was down there, so when you were over at my house, I bet you met her. She was 17 years old, sneezing bubbles, one of 6 throat tumors at birth. She was skeleton thin. She was pissing the bed, Jeff, pissing the fucking bed. And what I did is I took pure H2O, and I put it to a fish, and Peachy lapped herself into perfect fucking health, Jeff Cooper, okay? And imagine my Uncle Bob's 6 breast tumor, 62 pounds, and type 2 diabetes vanishing in 4 months. Bottle that product and fucking sell it. And I'm making Craig Kuchar's $110 million, okay, look like fucking peanuts, Jeff Cooper. And you know what? For everybody that I went to school with in San Diego, I thought, you know what, if I fucking hit it big, Carson, if I told you this before, I always thought if I actually hit it really fucking big, I would actually pay all the houses, all the debts off for everybody that I went to high school with. Why the fuck not?
Right.
Why not pay it for it and pass it around if you can afford to, okay? Now, Craig Kuchar, deacon of the Mormon Church, he was one of my good friends, Bob, okay? And you know what? I heard that he had some problems with some of the things that I was saying in the past. I don't know if that's true, but fact is, if he would have embraced stevia, listened to his friend who didn't get a 1600 on his SAT like Craig did, okay, this is what the rich do, Bob. You know what they do? Is they look around the country for people like Bill Gates, people like Craig Kuchar, and they fucking give them free education at, you know, Harvard. Craig went to Princeton, okay? And he actually roomed with David Rockefeller Jr., okay?
Wow.
And you know what Craig told me? Craig told me that I was a big topic because, you know what? I could have started at any position on the fucking Princeton football team. That's what he told me. Yeah, I could have started as quarterback anywhere I wanted to. And I was like, nah, that's cool. You know, I'll pass. But that is what they do, Bob. They look for the best and the brightest, and they seduce them with money, okay? And it's like this, Craig. What have you done for your people, okay, that you knew when you grew up, okay, and where you lived? And when I hit it big, I'm fucking paying it forward, spreading it around, passing it on, okay?
Dan, are you going to have any problems with the guy that you knocked out? Is there going to be any retaliatory problems?
Could be. And like I said, man, in here, the only way that he could ever fucking faze me would be with a gun in his hand, okay? I'll fuck him up with a knife, you know what I'm saying? I'm not even tripping. I wouldn't really want to have a problem with hitting his... What I'd rather do is get these guys jobs down the road, Bob, okay? Because they're part of the fucking poor that never, ever had a chance, okay? That's what the rich do, Bob. They make these fucking laws to keep the best and the brightest of the poor back so they don't have a fucking chance, okay? If they take mice and they put them in a fucking maze and they can't get out and these mice become so fucking miserable that they actually cocaine themselves to death, even if they have food, don't you think that proves that, you know what, animals like to self-medicate and make life a little bit rosier, don't you think?
Yes, even animals, okay. Yes.
And humans are no different. I mean, I read this article on Carl Magnuson. They found a skeleton, and he had a little pouch on him, and you know what it had in there? It had mushrooms and marijuana, Bob. Even back 10,000, 15,000 years, our ancestors liked to get high, okay? And they allow people to get high on alcohol, right? And then what happens is Dodger baseball fans and Giants baseball fans get fucking killed and beat the fuck up, okay? And people go to jail or prison. Well, that's a good point. Did you hear about the recently the Giants fan that stabbed the Dodger fan to death?
Yep.
Okay, and guess what? The San Francisco district attorney was forced to let that guy go, even though that guy's dad said that he did it in self-defense, because you want to know why? They didn't have enough evidence, Bob. But in Sacramento, Dan Scully, oh, fuck that. They're fucking putting a $500,000, $1 million, no bail bond on this guy, and they're using all the fucking smut in his past to fucking send him to jail. That's why we have the highest overturn rate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's endemic of a system that's gone way haywire, way wrong, okay? What we should be doing is making jobs for our people to do that make things better, cleaning up the environment, okay? Not making things worse, right? There's enough money to go around, Bob. You realize that there's some people that have so much fucking money that they could spend $1 million a day for the rest of their lives and they wouldn't even come close to spending a quarter of it?
Yep.
Yeah, okay? There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of people that need it. We're fucking going hungry, starving, okay? People are battling, kind of like what Mel Gibson said in Braveheart. He goes, we're scrabbling for the scraps from Longstreet's table, okay, when we should be fucking having it all, right? And if you want to know the truth, Bob, what do you think about my theory that Jesus attacking the money lender's table and scattering money on the floor was Jesus attacking the essence of all evil?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, and really, think about it. The ancient archaeologists, who are they? These people, they fucking, they were the rich, Bob. They were the rich. And if they came across, ching, 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 is the essence of all evil, how easily is a dollar sign converted into a six?
That's right.
It's very close, isn't it?
Dan, how have you been treated by the Sacramento County Jail officials?
Except for me being Rodney King and having my shoulders fucked up, and tell you what, before that happened, my shoulder was fucking damn near 100%. The only problem that I had with it wasn't my shoulder, it was actually like in my back. Remember how I told you, you know, my back kind of got fucked up, and they didn't even touch that in the surgery?
Yeah.
Now I can't fucking, there's grinding, clicking, it pops, okay? They do another MRI, they're going to show that I got fucked up, okay? But I've been treated great, okay? You basically get back what you put in, okay? And if you treat these guys with respect, and they're not the guys that arrested me, okay? They're not the guys that put me in here, they're just doing their job. Most of these guys are fairly cool, okay? In any big organization, I don't give a fuck who it is, okay? In any big organization, you're going to have your assholes. Like Richie Incognito, okay? I tell you what, Bob, you know what I'm talking about, the guy for the
Miami
Dolphins, okay? Richie Incognito, I might be wrong, okay? You might be one of the nicest guys on the block, but I looked at you and I thought, I don't like you, okay? And I guarantee you, you talk to anybody, like Cedric Figaro, okay? That told me that I was better than every linebacker on the Chargers that he played with, but since Holt hated me and at the first call to Canada, he quote, wrecked it. Richie, before coming down to the NFL, and I said, dude, check it out. I said, if I wanted to play football, I'd go to Michigan, okay? And, Bob, I don't want to lose the tape that's in the story, but you know who Beth Bo Schembechler was, right?
No.
Bo Schembechler, I mean, I'll tell you what, the coach for San Francisco 49ers, okay, Jim Harbaugh, you know who Bo Schembechler was? Jim Harbaugh. If Bo Schembechler went on a recruiting trip, has me, and only me, with him and the owner of Domino's Pizza, I believe, watching fucking college football games on TV. You think they actually thought that I had some talent? Anyways, Richie, ask Cedric Figaro. I bet you that if I was in the same fucking locker room with you and I heard some of that shit going on, I'm going to beat your fucking ass, homeboy. Okay? Without a doubt. Anyhow, you know, they'd be guilty of discrimination.
Dan, can you give, is it possible to give people at home an approximate amount of time of when you'll be released, one way or the other?
Well, you know what, worst case scenario, okay, I think I was
Can I have 2 more minutes?
Yeah. How much more time do you have left, Dan?
I'm going to have to hang up. They're doing pill calls. And then what I'm going to do is they're going to deliver pills and shit to everybody. And then I'll be able to come back out here for one more telephone call.
All right. I'll see you later.
Okay.
Goodbye.
All right. I'll call you back?
Yeah, call me back.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Bye.
All right, that was Dan Quinn. We're not going to play the second part of the update because we're almost out of time here on Carson's Corner, but we will be playing this during our next MMA show, which will be released sometime next week. You can listen to that archive, the Dan Quinn update, the first part of it, by just continuing to go on the website you're on now. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. I'll definitely post the show once the show is over on Facebook. You can friend me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And I encourage you to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio. You can follow the show. Just click the follow button next to the player, and you'll be able to follow me. You'll get email alerts as to when I'm going to have my next show. So that's a big thanks to John Peretti, who was great during the first hour, and Dan Quinn, and thanks to you out there for listening. Until next time, show some respect.